When the Institute for Women's Policy Research looked at the expected pay parity on a state-by-state level, there is a 121-year gap between when the first state, Florida, is expected to reach pay parity and when the last state, Wyoming, is expected to finally catch up. And there's data to suggest that the gender pay gap actually gets worse the higher women advance in their careers.
You're listening to Ambition Out Loud, the podcast for ambitious women tired of being underestimated and undervalued at work. Together, we're tackling workplace sexism, our own insecurities and self-doubt, and getting practical advice to move our careers forward. I'm your host, Nicole Magoo, and I'm an ambitious woman.
Swing. You should have seen that final show. I'm gonna go down swinging, and long after I am gone, when you hear that melody, you'll still remember me. That's how this girl is gonna carry on.
Hi, ladies. Today we're talking about 7 mindset shifts to elevate your salary. I spent a lot of time listening to Beyoncé's Run the World while I researched and wrote this episode, and it's for good reason. We need to get our heads straight and our game face on when we set out to elevate our pay. According to the American Association of University Women, optimistic estimates suggest that the gender pay gap will not be closed in the U.S. until 2059. By that time, I will be lucky to still be alive, and my oldest daughter, who is currently 11, will be 52 years old. What's even more concerning is that studies have isolated the trends from 2001 to 2017, and those more recent trends push us closer to 2106 as the most likely year for pay parity, suggesting that things really have been getting worse for millennials. It's also important to note that these estimates are based on national averages. When the Institute for Women's Policy Research looked at the expected pay parity on a state-by-state level, there is a 121-year gap between when the first state, Florida, is expected to reach pay parity and when the last state, Wyoming, is expected to finally catch up. As you might expect, the gender pay gap is also felt more acutely in some occupations than in others. And there's data to suggest that the gender pay gap actually gets worse the higher women advance in their careers. I'll link to all of this data in the show notes so that you can take a look and see how it might impact your own career. According to Equal Pay Today, the current state of pay is such: women of color as compared to white non-Hispanic men. Asian American women make 85 cents on the dollar. White women make 77 cents on the dollar. African American or Black women make 61 cents on the dollar. Native American women make 58 cents on the dollar. Latinas make 53 cents on the dollar. And all moms compared to all dads make 69 cents on the dollar. The bottom line is that the average woman stands to lose $430,480 over a 40-year career. That's almost $500,000. Imagine the kind of retirement you could have with that kind of money in the bank. Like most of the things we discuss on this show, this problem is not going to go away overnight. It will take government, advocacy organizations, and the private sector working together to stamp out the systemic sexism that continues to rob us of our fair share. I don't know about you, but I'm not willing to sit back and wait for this problem to magically go away. That's a lot of cash to leave on the table over the course of your career. So today, we're going to focus on mindset shifts that you can make, which will put you in the best position to minimize your own personal wage gap. I can't promise that these steps will eliminate the gender pay gap in your life completely, but I can tell you that I have used these in my own life to make sizable salary jumps and to leave less money on the table. So let's dive in. The seven mindset shifts you'll want to make to elevate your salary are: 1, know you're worth it. 2, fight the urge to be comfortable. 3, get your buzz on. 4, channel your inner salesman. 5, learn to love the weight. 6, try them on for size. And 7, be willing to walk away. So the first mindset shift is deceptively simple. Know you're worth it. Anyone remember those L'Oreal commercials from the 80s and 90s? They always had a beautiful woman on screen justifying her desire for the latest beauty products by saying, "Because I'm worth it." I'm not bashing L'Oreal. I'm simply using this to highlight women's long, long, long history with not valuing ourselves. Those commercials were highly effective because our mothers didn't feel that they were worth the $2.75 it costs for the at-home hair dye treatment. We have a long history of putting everyone else's needs above our own needs. In many cases, we entered the workplace grateful to even have a job, let alone a job we might actually like and find fulfilling. If we are happy at work, then we might have a tendency to say, "I don't really need the money." And even if this wasn't our internal monologue, it was often pushed on us by old-fashioned ideas about male breadwinning. If you start asking around, I bet you know more than one woman who has been told at one time or another, "Your husband pays the bills. You don't need that big of a salary." Of course, we have internalized some of this misogyny at various times in our careers. It would be foolish to think that some of these messages haven't seeped through and affected our psyche. Never mind the fact that single moms are sole breadwinners, or that the 2007 recession thrust many more married women into the role of primary breadwinner. The idea that we are not worth it is still very much present in society, and it can creep into our own minds if we're not intentional about pushing it out. How do we overcome this? We start with the data. Take the time to sit down and figure out what your entire compensation package adds up to. It's very important to be thinking of in terms of your total compensation package and not just your base salary. Benefits like stock options, subsidized childcare, tuition reimbursement, health insurance, bonuses, these all have value. You need to know your true starting point before you even think twice about entering into a salary negotiation. Whenever you enter into negotiations, always have a list of your benefits that you currently have and their value, along with a list of benefits you would like to have. There's always a chance that you will receive a no to the salary ask, but a yes to the benefits ask. And don't assume that asking for benefits outside of the corporate package is off limits. Employers can usually get one-off approvals for tuition reimbursement and other benefits if they really want to. Next, do your research. Glassdoor, LinkedIn, and payscale.com are just a few of the sites you can use to get an idea of the salary landscape for your industry and skill set. Use online research for a starting point, but do not consider it the end-all be-all. While the data is getting more accurate, I have seen instances where these sites underestimated my worth relative to more niche locations, markets, or sometimes just my specific achievements. It's not their fault. They're aggregating data and dealing with averages. If you think the estimates are coming in too low, trust your gut. Then, take the information you found online and start validating it with women in real life. Talk to other women in your industry, in your workplace, on college alumni boards, wherever you can find them. Many times, I have found that women are uncomfortable sharing their exact salaries. Plus, then there's that whole thing in our culture where many people just see it as completely impolite to talk about money. We've kind of got to get over that, ladies. However, if you ask these same women what would be a reasonable salary expectation for someone with X skills, X years experience, and looking to find a job in their industry, they're going to be far more likely to provide a realistic ballpark. Just that one little tweak to the question of removing the personal identifier will get you way more helpful answers. And try this out with men as well. If you only ask other women, you will get a better idea of what the female earning potential is. But if you really want to close your personal gender pay gap, as much as possible, you need to know what the true earning potential is, and that includes the men. As part of your research, you will also want to start getting familiar with the job descriptions on the market. Even if your goal is to stay in your existing role with a raise, you want to know what the current lay of the land is. How are other companies describing the position you have or want? What skills and certifications do they expect? What responsibilities does the role actually have? Sometimes you'll get lucky and see a salary band provided in the job description. What you're really looking to answer is, how do you stack up against these job descriptions? And if you wanted to make a move, how easy do you think it would be? If you left, how easy would it be for them to replace you? Again, I want you to do the research and develop an informed opinion, but do it with a grain of salt. Job descriptions are often cookie cutter, and their effectiveness is inherently limited by this fact. It's not that unusual to see a job description for a project manager that pays $50,000 looking deceptively similar to the job description for a project manager that pays $100,000 or more. There's two more important things that you need to know about job descriptions. We're going to cover one of those in the next mindset shift. But the first one is that many job descriptions have unconscious bias written into them. Textio is an AI-driven software company which has tools to identify and remove unconscious gender bias from job descriptions. As Textio puts it, gendered language isn't always obvious or intuitive. There are some types of phrases that may seem to fall into loose groups or categories, but there are also plenty of seemingly random examples like exhaustive, enforcement, and fearless that are statistically proven to skew your talent pool, in this case towards men. And it's highly unlikely that you're going to hear about those at your company's unconscious bias training workshops. This isn't just a software company inventing a problem so that it can make money to solve it. Harvard Business School, ZipRecruiter, Glassdoor, and many others have acknowledged that male-coded words like competitive, and I'm sad to say, leader, fall into this category too. In job descriptions, these can deter female applicants, thereby limiting the number of females in the hiring pipeline. As the woman looking at job descriptions, you need to be aware that this unconscious bias exists. You need to be aware so that you can look past the male-coded phrases to see if you might actually be a good fit for the role. Rewrite the job description using more female-friendly words if you need to, before you decide to pass on it. Lastly, play mind games to build your confidence. You've calculated your total compensation package and you've done the research. You're informed, and you've been grounded in reality. It's time to pick the numbers you want for your salary move and to get your game face on. Pick a salary range to target, have your list of nice-to-haves ready, and let's get your head straight. I want you to know your worth inside and out. I want you to be so confident in the numbers you're going after that you can feel it in your bones. Nothing sells quite like confidence, so your job is to do whatever it takes to get your confidence game up. Play mind games with yourself. Come up with a list of affirmations and recite them daily if that's your thing. Listen to empowering music like Beyoncé's Run the World if that's more your style. Meditate. I don't really care what it is, just find something that works for you. There's a song I listen to all the time called Money is Coming to Me by Eddie Watkins Jr., and half of you are going to laugh hysterically if you go listen to it, but I don't really care because it's catchy and for me, it works. It helps me get my mind aligned with the goals I'm going after, and that's what I want you to do as well. Play mind games on yourself until your confidence is aligned with what you're trying to achieve.
Do you find yourself going down an admin black hole from logging time, invoicing clients, and filing your expenses? I've had to log time for invoicing and budget allocation for the better part of my career. Along the way, I found hacks to shorten the amount of time I spend in the accounting tools, like tracking my billable hours in my Outlook calendar where I'm already spending most of my day, and then logging them all in the accounting system one time at the end of the month. But my favorite hack so far is FreshBooks, hands down. The interface is so easy to use that I can get in and out quickly. Invoices are generated off of timesheets in just a few clicks. They look professional and they're easily shared with clients without ever having to leave the tool. Their app even makes filing expenses easier by letting me upload receipts on the go. Slash your admin time, not your earnings. Start your free trial today at freshbooks.ambitionoutloud.com.
All right, so you know your number and you're confident that you're worth that number. So the next mindset shift I want you to make is to fight the urge to be comfortable. Women often unintentionally allow their comfort zone to influence their willingness to put themselves out there for a job. This brings us to another important thing you need to know about job descriptions. An internal study at Hewlett-Packard found that men will apply to a job if they meet only 60% of the qualifications, but women usually only apply to a job if they meet 100% of the qualifications. This study has been widely circulated, and these numbers are largely accepted as reality. The disagreement I see most commonly isn't around the numbers. It's around why women wait for that 100% fit before they apply. After reviewing many of the arguments, for me, it boils down to the fact that many times we don't like being uncomfortable. High-achieving women thrive in academic settings where there are clear guidelines, grading rubrics, and rules that level the playing field. We like a good challenge when we know what we're up against. We are comfortable in these highly structured situations. When we know what's expected of us, we know how to exceed those expectations. The problem is that the job market is not highly structured, and it's certainly not a level playing field. The men don't play by the same rules we do. Men are less likely to let imposter syndrome throw themselves into a spiral, questioning just how well they fit a single criteria on a job post. We read something like strategic leadership, develop business strategies that will drive growth, profitability, and competitive success. And we're like, strategic leadership? I don't know. I mean, I've had some really big and important initiatives that helped me and, you know, moved our overall vision forward. But I don't know if I would say I'm a strategic leader. Not only are the majority of men not spiraling like this, they're throwing out 40% of the qualifications as not even mattering. And before you read too much into this, I'm not saying the men are wrong. I kind of think they're right in this regard. What's the point of applying to a job that has no room for growth? If you can already do the job in your sleep, you should at least be considering jobs where you're going to learn something new. I know it's uncomfortable for us to walk into a room where the expectations are unclear. I don't find it any more comfortable than you do. When we don't have a firm grasp on the first 90 days and we can't see how things are going to unfold in our heads, when we don't know what to expect, then we don't know how to exceed those expectations. For high-achieving women, I think many times that is the real fear. If you want to grow into a higher salary, then please start getting comfortable with the idea that things are going to be uncomfortable for a little bit, and that's okay. You need that discomfort to grow into your full potential. And while you're at it, start considering opportunities that are outside of your industry too. We're in a hot job market, which means that there are opportunities just waiting for you to reach out and grab them. Learning a new industry is not as hard as it might sound, and far more of your skills are transferable than you're giving yourself credit for. Be open to new opportunities and new ideas about how your career path might progress. Careers these days are anything but linear. That brings us to mindset shift number 3, get your buzz on. By now you've reviewed enough job descriptions to know that keywords are buzzing in the jobs and the industries that you're considering. Your job is to suck it up and become a buzz master. Listen, you might not like it, but whether you're vying for a higher title or promotion at work, or you're looking to jump into a new role at a totally different company, the people with the power want to know that you're up to speed on industry trends, that you can communicate clearly with staff, customers, and vendors, and that you can be a thought leader for their company. They're going to evaluate your request for promotion, or you as a job candidate, in part against these unspoken expectations. You don't have to be an expert on every keyword you come across. You just need to be well-read and able to hold your own during interviews and meetings. Take the time to read industry articles and understand the hot issues relevant to the job. Be educated on different perspectives, benefits, and challenges surrounding the buzz. Know which buzzwords matter and include them on your resume so that you actually stand a chance of getting flagged for review by those algorithms. For example, one of my key focuses as a consultant is software development. Two major technology advances that are really shaking things up in this field include artificial intelligence and blockchain. I've had some experience building AI-based solutions, but I'm certainly not an expert in either of these technologies. You'd better believe, though, that I keep myself up to speed in learning about both of them, so that I can help clients and prospective clients determine if either of these technologies could be a good fit for their particular needs. It's not my job to be the expert. It's my job to provide the thought leadership and then go find an expert to add to the team if we decide we need one. That's true in your corporate job, too. Okay, so we've been talking about the buzzwords, and it's only natural that the fourth mindset shift would be to channel your inner salesman. What I mean by that is that in all salary conversations, you need to be ready to make the ask and expect to negotiate. PayScale is a compensation software company, and it claims to have the world's largest database of rich salary profiles. In 2018, they surveyed over 160,000 people to investigate who is asking for and who is getting raises at work. The data shows that men and women appear to be asking for raises at the same rate, but this number is a little bit misleading, and I'm going to go into that in a minute. However, overall, they are still seeing that 63% of people have not asked for a raise from their current employer. Now, fair enough, some of those people might still be within their first year of employment or have some other completely legitimate reason why they didn't ask for a raise. But I'm guessing from personal conversations that there's an awful lot of women out there that fall into that 63% that probably should be asking for a raise. Also, and this is important, the reason why the fact that men and women are not asking for raises at the same rate is misleading has a lot to do with the reasons men and women give for not asking for the raise. Men are 3% more likely to get a raise without even needing to ask. Even more importantly, women are still 9% more likely to say that they didn't ask for the raise because they're uncomfortable negotiating salary. Here's the thing, ladies. I get that salary negotiations are intimidating and that many of us feel ill-prepared in this area. If this is you, the American Association of University Women has a free online salary negotiation course you can take, and I'm going to link to it in the show notes for you. I also want to acknowledge that as a woman asking for a raise, it is possible that you could suffer backlash. Disrupting gender norms sometimes leads to worst-case scenarios. If you worry that asking for a raise could lead to backlash, then my question is this. Is this really the kind of company you want to be working for anyway? For now, I just want you to focus on the fact that if you don't ask, you don't get. If you don't ask, you don't get. I'm hoping that this next piece of information inspires you and gives you hope so that you feel empowered to ask for what you deserve. PayScale found that when people did ask for a raise, 39% of them got exactly what they asked for, and another 31% of them got some of what they asked for. That means that 7 out of 10 people that asked for a raise got more money. It also means that you should expect to negotiate. 3 out of 10 people didn't get the full raise they asked for, but they negotiated and they were able to walk away with a higher salary than they started with. And remember, we are looking at total compensation packages. So if cold hard cash is off the table, see if you can get some other benefit from your wish list. Or at the very least, try to get a better title. A better title may not put more money in your pocket today, but if all else fails, it could help you land a better position and a higher salary on your next move. Here's some additional info to consider. PayScale's report shows that white women may be slightly less likely to receive a raise than white men, but the difference is not statistically significant. Other studies have found stronger evidence of bias against women, but it's not really clear how race factors into their data. Unfortunately, we still have a long way to go where race is concerned. PayScale's data showed that women of color are 19% less likely to receive a raise than white men. That's a pretty big number. As a country, we really need to do better here. Another thing to know is that where you live matters. Midwesterners are the least likely to ask for a raise. As a born and raised Midwesterner, ladies, let me assure you that it is possible to be both polite and well-paid. Also, if you live on the West Coast, you're most likely to ask for a raise. So if you're in California, yes, everybody really is doing it. PayScale also found some cities are more likely to pay for raises than other cities. The top five best cities to land a raise in are Ogden, Utah, Honolulu, San Francisco, Boston, and Seattle. On the flip side, if you live in Gary, Indiana, it's not looking good for you. You should also know that how long you've been at your current employer matters. Staying for 2 to 3 years increases your chance of landing a raise threefold compared to those who've been in their current position for 1 year or less. Lastly, your position within the company matters. Managers are 42% more likely to receive a raise over individual contributors. Directors are 119% more likely, and VPs or C-suite execs are 142% more likely to get the raise. So for those of you ladies in any level of management, pay attention. If you remember at the top of the show, I called out the fact that the pay gap increases the higher women climb. Based on the data, there's a good chance that you're currently underpaid and that if you ask for a raise, you will get all or part of it. This asking thing carries over into negotiating salary for a job offer too. Working with Langer Research Associates, HuffPost, Yahoo, and CARE combined forces to conduct a study this year and found that 64% of women accepted the first offer that they were given without even trying to negotiate. Ladies, over half of us made no attempt to negotiate our last job offer. Again, I don't want to sugarcoat it and tell you that trying to negotiate a job offer is always going to be smooth sailing. I've received offers in situations where a third-party recruiter was involved, and the recruiter flat-out rejected to take my request to the hiring manager. I was literally told no, they don't negotiate, without any effort on the recruiter's part, but I didn't let it stop me. I still made the ask. I came back to the table and requested tuition reimbursement instead, and I was able to get that pushed through even when the salary ask was being blocked. The total compensation package was still appealing, and I was genuinely excited about the work, so I took the job. You better believe, though, that after I'd been in the position for a while and gained my manager's respect and trust, I let him know how the recruiter had treated me, and he helped me get back some of the money that had been previously denied. It wasn't a perfect solution, but perfect solutions are often not available to us. I want you to ask anyway and leave as little money on the table as you possibly can. And while we're talking about channeling our inner salesman, I have one last piece of advice that's going to be somewhat controversial. Most people will tell you the opposite of what I'm about to say. But I do want you to start thinking like you're in sales because effectively you are. You're selling yourself. And in sales, we qualify our leads. What do I mean by qualify our leads? I mean that salary range should be one of the first questions you get answered in the interview process. As I mentioned earlier, job descriptions often start to sound the same, and two positions can be described in very similar terms, even though they have significantly different salary ranges. If you're looking for a base salary of at least $100,000, then don't waste your time on jobs that are only going to pay $50,000. Whenever possible, try to qualify a job lead through online data available on Glassdoor, LinkedIn, or other sites. When not possible, make sure you find out the salary range during your first call, which is typically an HR phone screen. The purpose of that phone screen is for HR to qualify you as a candidate and for you to qualify the job as a real lead. If you're freaking out about what I just said, take a deep breath. It is possible to talk money and be polite at the same time. Near the end of the phone screen, I generally say something to the effect of, "Thank you, Joe. This position sounds very promising. Now, I do want to be cognizant of both of our time, so before we take this any further, can you please confirm the salary range for me?" And then you stop talking. Let there be silence. The silence may very well feel like you are falling into a black hole, but grit your teeth and bear through it. In my experience, if you allow a little space for silence, Joe will often come back with an approved salary range. And make sure you're taking good notes during this call too. I've run into situations where I qualified jobs And then when I received the offer, it came back in lower than the qualified amount. And I had to remind the hiring manager that we had actually already bottomed out the base salary. I don't know if recruiters try to pull one over on men like this or not, but I do know from experience that as a woman, you need to be prepared for anything. Now, I have two caveats that go along with qualifying leads. The first is that this whole notion of qualifying leads early in the interview process is really reserved for people that are moving up into the high five-figure range and above, and they already have some strong work experience on their resume. If you're in the first few years of your career or you're making closer to $40,000 or $50,000 a year, then you're probably not ready to start qualifying leads this way. You have to be somewhat proven in your field to be able to pull this off. If you're a career newbie, then trying to qualify leads too early will make you sound arrogant. If, however, you know that you're worth $75,000, $80,000 a year or more, I suggest you start qualifying your job leads. You're just wasting your time if you don't. The second caveat is more of an aside. If you've been in your current position for a few years and you want to get a little interview practice and get back into the flow and the feel of things, it's okay to take a couple of interviews for jobs that haven't been fully qualified out as leads. However, do this respectfully. People are busy and no one likes to be strung along. So as soon as you know the job's not going to be a good fit for you, politely let them know so they can move on with other candidates. The fifth mindset shift you're going to want to make is to learn to love the wait. Making money moves requires patience, and that becomes even more true the higher up the ladder you get. The number of jobs available decreases as you climb to higher salary ranges, so it often takes a little bit longer to make your way into that perfect job. If you're looking to get promoted at your existing company, you may need to wait until the next budget cycle rolls around, or until responsibilities can be shifted, or the org chart can be tweaked. Be patient. I'm not saying be a wallflower. If your boss starts off saying, give it 3 months, and that suddenly turns into give it another 6 months, or give it until next year, you're going to need to read the tea leaves. You're being played. If, however, you've made the ask, and your boss has very legitimate reasons why he's asking for your patience, then embrace the wait. If he's serious about moving you up in the organization, then he'll be able to demonstrate to you that progress is being made, and that you're not waiting in vain. He, or she, may very well be moving mountains for you, and he's just asking for a little bit of time. That's a beautiful place to be. You've got yourself a sponsor. So now your job is to grow your skill set so that you're ready to step into the new role and to help him while he's trying to help you. If you're on the market looking for a new job, then you need to pace yourself. Be aware of the peaks and the valleys in the hiring cycles in your industry. You want to be actively and consistently putting yourself forward for qualified positions. But you need to realize that sometimes getting the best offer takes time. The higher the salary range you're looking for, the fewer positions are available, and the less frequently new positions come on the market. If you're in a rush to get out of your current desk and into a new one, then you're going to be more inclined to accept a position below your dream salary. Use the extra time to conduct informational interviews, brush up on your industry reading, and try to meet new people. Be patient if you need to be, and use that time to put yourself into opportunities way and to prepare so that you present well when the opportunity does strike. A little side note here. I understand that patience is a bit of a luxury sometimes. Whenever possible, don't wait for things at work to get so bad that you need a new job like yesterday. Update your resume yearly and start entertaining the idea of a new job at the first real signs of trouble so that you can have the time you need to let things play out in your favor. If things turn around at work and you change your mind, you can always choose to stay put. Having options never hurt no one. All right, we've made it to the sixth mindset shift. So in order to bring home the bigger bucks, I want you to remember to try them on for size. Similar to the idea of qualifying leads, we often enter an interview room thinking that we have no power. As a job candidate, you have to own your own power. You need to be going into that interview room not just trying to impress them, but trying to figure out if they can impress you. What's the office vibe? Do the ins and the outs of the job on a day-to-day basis excite you? Are you going to be bored 6 months in, or are you going to be in a place where there's ample opportunity for growth and future advancement? Do you have any chemistry with the people you're going to be working with every day? Do you think the hiring manager is someone who can be a role model for you? To the best of your ability, you want to be figuring out if this position and this company are a good fit for you. Show your enthusiasm and bring a good, positive energy to the conversation. But also ask thought-provoking questions that demonstrate you're carefully weighing your options. We're not playing hard to get here. We're just not crushing on them in a totally obvious and overdone way. It's not middle school, girls. We're coming to the table as equals, and we're looking for a genuine fit. If you need any help figuring out what good fit might look like for you, go back to episode 4 with Sarah Vermont, where she shares some of the tips on how to define feel-good fit. And at that, we have made it to the end. The 7th and the final mindset shift we're going to talk about today is be willing to walk away. If you're looking to elevate your salary, then you need to prioritize what's important to you. Before you enter into negotiations for a promotion, a raise, a new job, any of the above, you need to be really clear about what on the list is a must-have for you and which of the items on your list are just going to be nice-to-haves. There's no right or wrong answer here. This is all about knowing what's important to you, and that's going to be different for each of us. When you get into the thick of negotiations, you're going to look at that list of must-haves and let that guide you. If you're looking at an offer that meets all three of your must-haves and maybe it only has one or two of your nice-to-haves on the list, that's a pretty good place to be. If, however, you're at the end of negotiations and you're looking at an offer that only meets one of your three must-haves, I don't care how many nice-to-haves are being piled on top. What you have is a sundae with all the toppings and none of the ice cream. If the final offer does not meet your must-haves, you have to be willing to walk away. Now, let's be really clear here, because what I am not telling you is that being willing to walk away is a negotiating tactic. Do not say you're going to walk away unless you really mean it. If you have your heart set on a job, don't risk the offer being rescinded by some misguided attempt to manipulate them into a better deal. They're going to see right through it, and then you're going to be left wondering what went wrong. What I am saying is that you owe it to yourself to hold out for the better offer or to consider leaving your job for a company that better appreciates your value. Have a little faith in yourself. This is not going to be the only job or the only offer you'll ever get. Sometimes being willing to walk away causes people to take you a little more seriously and actually results in a better offer. That does happen sometimes. That job I mentioned earlier, where I had qualified the lead and then they made me that lowball offer anyway, it worked out that way. I went back to them with the offer in hand, and I more or less said, "Guys, I'm sorry to have wasted your time. I was under the impression from our earlier conversations that this position started at $90,000. I would never have let the conversation progress this far if I had known the offer would come in this low." They responded with a twinge of embarrassment, and I got a new offer in the low six figures. I took the job, and in doing so, I jumped from the mid five figures up to the low six figures overnight. That overnight success took a year-long job search. Was it the perfect company? No. It was a stepping stone position. But it was exactly where I needed to be that year, and it perfectly positioned me for even more significant growth in the jobs that followed. I wasn't willing to walk away from that job because I knew they'd come back with a better offer. I'm not psychic. I was willing to walk away from that job because I knew my value. I had done the research. I had made the mindset shifts that I've shared here, and I knew in my core that I was worth it, and that if they wouldn't pay me what I was worth, I would find some other company that would. And you know what? You're worth it too. That's it for today, ladies. Now go out there and make some money moves.
That's our episode for today, and thank you for listening. We want to hear from you. This podcast is all about showing up and helping to serve you so that you can accomplish your goals. And we want to celebrate you. So if you head over to ambitionoutloud.com, you can record your own work wins for us to share on a future podcast episode, or record questions, things you'd like to have us address in future episodes.
So that's ambitionoutloud.com, or you can always just email us at info@cultivateinc, that's I-N-K, .com. Ambition Out Loud is produced by Cultivate Inc. LLC, with music today by Steve Rice Music. Stay in touch. You can connect with us on Instagram at ambition_unboxed. New episodes will be available every other week. I do, after all, have clients to serve and a company to run. If you enjoyed today's episode, please head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast. It does a lot to help us appear in rankings. And don't forget to share it with a friend. Until next time, remember, your ambition is a beautiful thing.
I'm gonna go down swinging. There'll be a tale to tell. Like a boxer in the ring, I'll give my everything. Until I hear that final bell, well, I'm gonna go down swinging, whether I'm right or wrong. I know without a doubt, until the lights go out.